When Psyche was notified of the explosion, Hanuman and Bast had to physically restrain the anguished young beauty from rushing to the blast site herself. Well, Bast did most of the actual restraining, but Hanuman never passed up an excuse to lay his hands on Psyche's incredible body.
Please, Psyche. There's nothing you can do now.
How do you know they're dead? Can you be sure?
If only I could be.
Rotten luck that Selkie had been spotted. He'd hoped the little contretemps he'd engineered between Emerald and Elliot would keep them distracted. Fortunately, the bomb had detonated before either of them had gotten out, and the door had automatically resealed itself the moment the observation wall was breached. Elliot and the busty Blaze had been hit by the force and debris of the blast, and then by kilotons of lake water. The odds of their survival were agreeably slim. But Psyche's question was a valid one. He had to be absolutely certain. Selkie had reported by radio from the lake's surface moments ago, but he'd promptly ordered her back down.
My dear, Selkie and our best swimmers are searching the lake as we speak. If either of them survive by some miracle, they'll find them. But I must be honest with you, Psyche. The chances are very poor. Rachel was barely out the door when the bomb blew, and she was badly off. We're rushing her to hospital to ensure her baby's safety.
In fact, according to those on the scene, she was conscious. All the more reason to make sure Psyche didn't get a chance to talk with her.
If there's any chance at all, I have to be there. He's my father!
And as your father, he would want you to be safe. He may not be the only target, Psyche. Let me suggest a better way. Come with Bast and me to the security center in the hub. We can monitor the whole search from there. You'll know the moment they find the fate of your father. And you'll be safe there, in case the troubleshooters have targeted you as well.
How could this have happened? Emerald would never have been party to an assassination, no matter the provocation. And she was too good to let it backfire on her.
It had to be the troubleshooters. They must have planted a bomb on her.
You said she was nearly naked.
Perhaps they fed her a pill of some sort, or switched her cell phone. I don't know. There's so many ways to deliver a bomb these days. But it's the only possibility, isn't it? Who else here would want to kill Elliot Thorne?
They wouldn't show their hand so openly. It would turn everyone against them.
That's why they used Emerald, don't you see? They've already painted her as an assassin. She was the perfect dupe. They fooled her into thinking they were on her side, then waited until she went to Elliot and... Oh, that poor, lovely girl.
What a waste of two good D-cups.
Psyche glared at him, grabbed his shoulders, and slammed them into the wall.
What about my father? Elliot Thorne, the greatest man in the world, is...
She was unable to finish the thought. She seethed, the rage building within her. But then she whirled to the delegates who'd come with her, eager as always to see to her needs.
Find them. Find the troubleshooters. Tear this place apart if you have to. And tear them apart when you find them. No, no. Save them from me.
She stormed off, her pawns following, and Hanuman scampered to keep up, Bast coming along behind.
My dear Psyche, what you plan to do?
You don't want to know, Hanuman. I don't quite know myself yet. I've never had the chance to discover just how much prolonged anguish I can inflict on a human mind. My father, he always urged restraint, patience, told me not to indulge myself too far.
Her hands convulsed into claws, tendons strained in her supple neck. She grabbed one of the shorter delegates by the lapels and pulled him clear off his feet.
Then where did that get us?
Slamming him into the wall, she tore at his face with her long, sharpened nails, kicked him savagely in the shins, kneed him in the groin.
What are you standing there for? Find the troubleshooters!
The delegates hurried to comply, but Psyche did not go with them. After a moment, she looked at Hanuman.
You're right, Hanuman. We can direct the search better from the hub. I need to stay focused. Thank you, Hanuman. You've always been so good to me. I'm sorry I yelled, honey. Daddy would have been so disappointed in me.
No, he would have understood. He knew how much you loved him, and he loved you just as much.
But he would want me to be strong for him. I'm the leader of the Vanguard now. It's up to me to ensure his legacy.
Yes. Yes, that's the spirit. With your powers and the brilliance and vision you inherited from Elliot, there's nothing you can't do. And I'll be right there with you, helping you unite humanity once and for all.
Not all of it. Not the Sheaf. Not Earth. And not the troubleshooters. They killed the greatest leader history has ever known. And I will make them pay.
Hanuman merely smiled. Perhaps he could take over as her surrogate father figure. Not too literally, of course, since that would preclude the frequent and ambitious sex he intended to have with her. But maybe, if he played his hand right, he could convince her of the joys of living as nature intended. Hanuman smiled, watching Psyche's perfect ass undulate before him, and contemplated how much more perfect she would be with a nice long tail. Or maybe he would give her butterfly wings for real. Or why not both? Emery struggled toward the surface, but the dead weight she was dragging held her down. The cold water both stung and soothed where her bare skin was burned. It could have been worse. The charge had been calibrated to deliver all its force into shattering the observation wall and letting the inrush of high-pressure water and shards of wall material do the rest, so as to protect Selkie and the other lake denizens from the lethal hydraulic shock of a larger blast. But while the door may have trapped Emerald and Thorn inside, enough of a gap remained at the moment of detonation to ameliorate the overpressure shock as the lake burst in and compressed the air ahead of it. Nonetheless, the combined impact of the overpressure, the water itself, and the wall shrapnel would have been instantly lethal to any baseline human and most mods. But Emery had been spared the worst of it. Once she'd come to her senses, she'd realized something had shielded her. Elliot Thorne's body, which now floated limp in the water, blood billowing from his lacerated back. The pale infrared ghost of his heart still beat, but weakly. Emery owed Elliot Thorne her life. By chance? Or she'd had no time to contemplate it. Even her oxygen-rich blood had its limits, and her inbuilt emergency reserve was all but depleted after that last fight. Scanning the room, she'd spotted a knocked-over cabinet with some gill rebreathers spilling out. She'd grabbed one for herself, sucked in the oxygen it extracted from the water. Then she'd grabbed a second one, strapped it over Thorne's face, and dragged him toward the jagged hole in the wall. It was no easy task getting him to the surface. All that muscle and dense Vanguardian bone meant he wasn't very buoyant. For that matter, she wasn't much more buoyant herself, thanks to her bionics and reinforcements. It was slow going. She was still weak, and the rebreather wasn't calibrated for her oxygen-hungry metabolism. She kept herself motivated by imagining the nice, cathartic trial she was going to take Thorn in for, assuming somebody could figure out who had the authority to try him. Suddenly, a hand came from behind her and ripped the rebreather from her face. Emery shot an elbow back, grazing a well-padded body. She spun to see Selkie flinging her mask aside, then darting away as Emery swiped at her with her free arm. Emery tucked that arm under Thorn's again and tried to increase her upward pace, but Selkie swam down from above and pushed down on Emery's shoulders. Emery again freed one hand to swing at her, but Selkie somersaulted and took her in the face with a flippered foot. Emery lost her grip on Thorn and had to head after him as he slowly sank. She resumed her grip and started upward again, knowing Selkie would be there but having no choice. As she closed on the seal woman, Emery kicked at her, but Selkie dodged easily. This was her element, and Emery was too hurt, too weak. Again, those hands pushed down on her. Strong, flippered legs churned water. Emery's lungs were crying for air. She felt her consciousness starting to fade. But suddenly there was something else in the water, a silver dervish striking at Selkie again and again, driving her away. The figure descended toward Emery, took her in its arms, began to lift her skyward. An angel. Tenshi.
Sorry.
Kari, clad only in her silver light armor bodysuit, joined her in pulling Thorn to dry land. And then Arjun was there, wading in and helping them both to the shoreline, where Kari's scarlet jacket lay crumpled on the sand.
Where am I?
Kari saw the state of Thorn's back. Arjun whipped a medical gel pack from his armor and sprayed it over Thorn's back.
Watch it. He's not an innocent.
He's not going anywhere. He's barely conscious.
You don't look much better. And you, what are you doing here? You need to be safe to testify against Tai.
I can take care of myself. Better than you can, it looks like.
Yeah, well, thanks. How'd you know?
Zephyr told us.
How?
He sent a sologram.
Emery's eyes widened at the thought of a naked, winged marble statue soaring through the docks, but Kari shook her head.
He made it look like a dock worker.
Clever boy.
Thank you.
So what happened down there?
Hanuman Kwan sicked me on Thorn. Had his pet seal try to blow us both up. Probably wanted to make it look like I'd killed him, or you had.
But why? What would he get out of that?
Psyche. She worships her father. If she thought he'd been killed, thought Ceres and Earth were behind it, with all the people she can control.
What?
We have to find Kwan. He's probably with Psyche.
A hushed voice spoke over Kari's cell phone.
Denshi, this is Hijab. I've been listening. I've already spotted Kwan and Ms. Thorn. They're heading for the hub, accompanied by Bast. The Neo-Gaians have secure facilities there that would be difficult to breach.
You have to keep them from getting there. Kwan was behind Chakra City, along with Thorn. It was all Thorn's idea, and Psyche. She killed Sensei.
Then she will not escape me. This I vow.
For her sake, I hope you get to her before I do.
Emery, aren't you a bit, naked?
You think I care about that right now?
Well, you could use some protection. And some warmth, Miss I just nearly drowned. Besides...
Kari made her way over to her fallen jacket and lifted it to reveal a bundle underneath.
Zephyr sent this along. He thought you might want it.
It was a green blaze uniform.
Thank you, Zephyr. It's been too long since I wore green.
It's your best color.
Trouble coming, I think.
Emery spun to take in the small mob heading their way.
The delegates!
Under Psyche's spell.
Okay, you need to explain that.
Just call it mind control. Sort of. Point is, they're dupes. Hold them off, but try not to hurt them, okay?
Get it. You get going. We'll guard your back.
Emery finished pulling on her boots.
I know you will. Good luck.
Tentatively, Emery set off into a trot. Soon she came to the cave leading to the nearest radial shaft, seized a climbing vine, and began to ascend the spinward wall. And then she was in the transfer drum between the rotating wheel and the freefall core of the habitat. 6 shaft termini ringed its circumference, while on its sides, rotating slowly from her perspective, were multiple corridor entrances. Hijab's tracking signal on her retinal HUD highlighted one corridor, and Emery grabbed its edge, taking a second for her perceptual frame to shift. Now the sidewalls were standing still, and the shaft adits rotating.
Blaze!
The wall seemed to distort, a subtle bulge in it unwrapping to reveal Mariam's black-clad form inside her cloak.
I think Bast caught my scent, but I managed to elude her. They've taken a shortcut through the warehouse sector, though. They went in moments ago, but Arjun and Tenshi have called for backup.
Then go, I can handle this.
Are you sure?
I've taken Bast before. Besides, once Psyche finds out her dad's alive and Kwan tricked her, Bast will have to protect him from her.
Very well. I vowed she would not escape. I trust you not to make me a liar. Allah be with you, Emerald.
I hope so. I need all the help I can get.
Bast hated freefall. Flying was for birds, and birds were food. In gravity, her sense of balance and position was flawless, of course, but it was hard to get a sense of position when there was no up or down. True, like all Neo-Gaian warriors, she'd had freefall combat training, and naturally she was superb at it and looked great doing it. But it was something she had to think about. She was happier relying on instinct. Here in the warehouse, at least there was this nice gridwork of cables she could use to orient herself. Long, stringy things were always good, though they were better when they wiggled around. But she didn't like having to negotiate a path between all these big, massive crates and containers just hovering in midair. She knew they couldn't fall, that as long as they stayed clipped to the cables, and the cables stayed taut, and their thruster pods didn't fire, they would stay right where they were. But her instincts kept telling her they were going to fall on her. And if her instincts said something, then the universe shouldn't do things differently. For a moment back there, she'd almost had a chance to work off her anxiety when she'd caught the faint sound of someone pursuing them, someone whose presence was masked. The chase had been entertaining for a while, but it hadn't paid off. And then Hanuman had made them come this way through all the crates. Bast was more eager than ever to kill something, and she wasn't getting her wish. That shouldn't happen either. Then she caught another scent.
The redhead.
Hanuman and the scrawny blonde turned back at the sound of her hiss.
More pursuers?
Beyond him, Bast saw, the reinforcements he'd called were arriving. Sifaka from his personal bodyguard staff, and some dock security guy she didn't know. A jackal or dingo or some other damn dog.
You go on. I'll check it out.
Hanuman nodded and pulled the blonde farther along toward the guards. Bast caught herself on a cable, stopping her forward motion, and turned to consider the arena.
If I have to think, I might as well think.
But her instincts still told her the place should be falling down on her. Wait. Her eyes widened. Maybe her instincts were steering her the right way after all. Clutching the cable with hands and feet, she slinked to the end of it and began unhooking it from the wall. Stringy things were always better when they wriggled around. Once more, Emery soared through the maze of crates and cables, closing in on Quan and Psyche. She was close enough to track their scent now. There. She caught a glimpse of Quan and Psyche between two cargo bins, a few dozen meters ahead. She thought of calling out to Psyche, telling her Thorn still lived, but decided to wait until she got closer. But then Emery realized the maze was changing shape. Cables were floating loose, cargo bins drifting. She grabbed a still taut cable and pulled herself to a halt, looking around. The containers were moving slowly, but some were very massive, and it wouldn't do to get caught between two of them.
Ugh.
Just then, the cable she held sprang loose, and Emery had to lunge for the next one and pull herself out of the way as it whipped past. It struck the shin of her boot. She pulled herself along to find a better vantage point on that cable's former terminus. Before she got far, a medium-sized crate before her got struck by something behind it and came toward her at more than a drifting pace. Emery pushed off the crate beside her and dodged it. Beyond it, the orderly lattice of the warehouse was falling into slow, stately chaos. She was about to turn around when she was struck by a flying cat.
Yeah!
Bast slammed into her. Her greater momentum knocked Emery back toward a strained cable. Emery's back slammed into the edge of a crate, flipping her head and shoulders back against its side, and she saw another crate drifting toward her, sandwiching her upper body. She pulled free moments before they crunched together. Just then, the cable snapped. Emery kicked off from the crate as a jagged cable end whipped through the air and gouged a deep furrow in its side. The whole lattice was falling apart as crates slammed into each other, breaking them free of their moorings. Some smashed open, sending hundreds of smaller boxes and containers bouncing around the bay. And Emery was caught in the middle of it. She did her best to calculate the angles, estimating the safest path through the whirling debris, and made her way as best she could. She knocked aside the spilled cargo as she went, but made the mistake of punching through a loose bag of fertilizer, which ruptured and sprayed its contents into her face. As she blinked to clear her eyes, she realized she could smell more than just the fertilizer. Sawdust, grain. The air was filling with particulates. The collisions were generating static discharges in the dry warehouse air, and if the dust built to sufficient concentration, along with the fertilizer and the other flammables that were likely stored here... Emery caught another faint glimpse of Psyche past the swirling debris. She and Quan were nearly to the exit.
Good. Now I just have to get there, too.
But just then, more cables snapped.
Whoa!
Emery moved quickly out of the way, but Bast was not finished with her. Emery flipped around and caught her wrists, holding her claws at bay and squeezing hard.
We've got to get out of here. The dust, it's explosive.
Bast didn't listen. But Emery caught someone else's attention. Psyche whirled, grabbing the edge of the hatch to halt herself.
Emery! Where's my father?
He's alive, Psyche!
She got her legs up and kicked Bast away.
Listen, we have got to get out of...
Listen to her! If she survived, she must have known about the bomb! She killed him!
No, Psyche! Quan planted the bomb! He's using you! He wants to...
The she-cat hit hard, pinning her to the side of a bin, and Bast dug her claws into its polymer shell as her jaws went for Emery's throat. Emery got her left arm under Bast's chin, but she was weakened, and Bast was determined. Those fangs snapped closer, closer. And then Emery's right hand snaked around, grabbed Bast's tail, and yanked it sideways between two large bins just before they collided. Emery broke free. Bast was down for the count. Emery kicked off toward Quan, and his guards drew their guns. She caught herself on a cable and ducked behind a crate.
Stop shooting, you idiots!
You're lying. Hanuman wouldn't do that to me. You must have... Hanuman, let me take her. I can pull it from her.
No, she's too dangerous. We have to get to the bunker now. Trust me, Psyche.
I
Psyche should be able to tell.
Perhaps she couldn't read Quan's simian micro-expressions, but she should have questioned his changing story, should have known to be wary of his plans for her.
But that's just it, isn't it? Psyche's so used to being the puppet master, she can't recognize when she's the one being played.
Psyche!
Emry looked up to see Psyche whirling, her face bursting into joy.
Daddy!
Thorn was closing in on them, pushing his way through the clashing debris with no evident concern for the danger, as though his determination alone would clear a path. His eyes were locked on Hanuman.
Quan!
No, Baba. I've changed my mind. Shoot all you want. I do pardon the cliché, but if I can't have her, well...
Hanuman waved a jaunty farewell through the closing door as the guard began opening fire, his shock dart striking Psyche. Stray shots hit the tumbling crates and containers around her, discharging fierce electricity, setting some of the small containers on fire.
No!
They had seconds to live now. Emry saw one chance. Just beyond and ahead of Thorn was a burst-open crate lined with shock-absorbing foam for fragile cargo. With its contents nearly spilled out, it was big enough to hold a few people. But there was no way of getting to Psyche in time. Hating herself for the choice, she grabbed Bast and kicked off the biggest crate behind her with all her might. The two of them barreled into Thorn's side, and Emry grabbed hold as they veered onto a new vector, away from Psyche.
No! Psyche!
Thorn tried to break free and get to his daughter. Emry held him firmly as they struck the open lid of the crate and rolled in. The shockwave slammed the lid shut, saving their lives. Then the crate hit something and cracked open. Her eyes burned, and her bare arms and head tingled and ached fiercely as they swelled from within. They were in vacuum, but not open space. The cargo corridor within the docking module, its walls scarred from the debris that had blown through it like chaff from a cannon. The cargo lock had blown out. The end wall of the corridor had blown out to vacuum in turn. But a nanotube cable mesh had caught and held most of the cargo, including their own crate, while allowing the literally explosive decompression of the corridor. Beyond was blinding light from the sun mirror, rippling as stray debris punched through the mirror's thin film. Emry, Thorn, and Bast were now drifting back inward through a cloud of debris. Beads of their own blood trailed them like cometary tails. All around them were passages leading to docked ships, plenty of safe havens. If only she could get to one of them and get it open before her body's oxygen reserves ran out. But wait, one was opening on its own. A light beckoned.
Emry, in here.
Emery's swollen fingers clumsily grabbed the arms of Thorn and Bast, both of whom were virtual dead weights. As their course brought them toward a wall, she planted her feet on it, let her knees bend, and pushed off toward the lock, straining against the other's momentum. She got the aim right, but they were drifting toward it too slowly. She was weakening already. She felt consciousness starting to fade. But then she was breathing and aware again. The three of them floated in the lock as it repressurized. Bast remained limp, and Emry could see that she'd lost much of her tail. But that was nothing to what Elliot Thorn had lost. For the first time in over half a century, he was out of control. Emry had just finished securing Bast in Zephyr's medbed when she heard him undocking.
Zeph, what's going on?
She looked around to see that Thorn had disappeared.
Emry, Thorn's in the cockpit. He's warming up the plasma drive.
Oh, Goddess, stop him!
I can't. He's overridden my control somehow. I don't understand it.
Oh, shit! Psyche must have gotten the override codes out of me the first night.
Override codes?
Zephyr!
Nobody told me about any override codes.
Later, okay?
And you've known them all along?
Can we focus here?
Emry pulled her dart gun as she neared the cockpit hatch. Thorn hadn't even bothered to seal it. Once she got in, she saw why. He had a plasma gun from Zephyr's arsenal trained on the entrance, held firmly in one hand, while the other operated the manual controls to turn the ship so its exhaust nozzles would be aimed at Neo Gaia's core.
Come no closer. Do nothing to interfere, and I will leave you free to go when I'm done. You and your core are no longer priorities of mine.
You know they're going to blast us out of space if you don't power that drive down right now.
They locked that option. I have their overrides as well as yours. Psyche. Oh, she always gave me everything I asked for. She'd never let me down.
Elliot!
Do not try it, Emerald. Do not try to talk me down from this. Hanuman Kwan needs to pay for what he has done. His whole stinking race must pay. Psyche was worth more than all of them put together, and it will take all their lives to repay that debt!
You're going to slice up the whole habitat? What about all the other delegates? What about your allies?
I have warned the Vanguardians to evacuate immediately.
And what about all the others? The Vestans, the Hygieans, all of them? How many wars are you willing to start to punish one man?
He spun, coming out of the chair in a blur, and she found herself slammed into the wall.
You dare lecture me on morality? If you hadn't betrayed us, if you had stayed by her side...
No, Elliot, this isn't on me. Take it out on me, on the Neo-Gaians, on the whole soul system, and nothing will change. Punish anyone you want, but you'll still be hiding from your own guilt. It was you, Elliot. It was you who turned your daughter into a weapon, into a force of such power that people were willing to kill to take her from you. You used her, exploited her long before Kwan did. You made her a victim of her own power. Tell me, Elliot, was she ever really happy? Did she ever have the chance to be a little girl instead of a champion in training? Did she ever really have a friend, someone she could let go with and not try to manipulate? Did she even know what that meant?
2 minutes to plasma drive activation.
You designed her to be the instrument of your power. She never got a chance to live her own life. She never got to experience anything really true, anything that wasn't part of your agenda. Nobody ever saw who she really was, and she probably never knew herself. And that's the real crime, Elliot. And it's all on you.
His hand fell slowly away from her throat, but she stayed close, held his eyes.
Looking for someone to punish, to blame, someone to hate. That's just a way of hiding from your grief. A way to avoid the pain by pushing it onto someone else, to avoid admitting that sometimes there's just nothing we can do.
90 seconds.
We never want to admit things are out of our control. So when something terrible happens, we look for someone we can take it all down so we feel like we have some power. But that doesn't do any good because it's not what we want to have power over. The thing we want to change, the loss, that's impossible to do anything about. So we just end up wasting our power, abusing it to hurt other people.
70 seconds.
And when we do that, we're doing an injustice to the people we're grieving for because we're not letting ourselves just love them, just deal with their loss and face the grief we owe to them. And when we don't do that, we don't let them become part of our memory and let their legacy heal us of our pain and go on living the way they would have wanted.
Even if the guilt for their loss rests with us.
Maybe especially then. Because that's their legacy too. If we listen to it, it can help us use our power wisely or know when not to use it. Know when it's time to just let go and accept things as they are.
30 seconds. Mr. Thorne, if you'd like some time to think it over, that's entirely in your hands.
Thorne pushed back over to the controls and jabbed down on them.
Plasma drive powering down. Thank you. Now, if you wouldn't mind returning control to me...
Zephyr?
Emery moved closer to Thorne, stopping just short. She couldn't bring herself to touch him.
Go home and grieve, Elliot. Don't look for something to do about it. Don't take it out on the universe. Just let it happen. Otherwise, trust me, you will never find peace.
But what of Kwan?
He'll get his karmic reward. If the troubleshooters have anything to say about it.
In the wake of the explosion, the Neo-Gaians seemed disinclined to launch further attacks on Thorne or the troubleshooters. With Psyche gone, there was no longer any point. Besides, their sun mirror and docking facilities needed immediate repair, and even Kwan's agenda had to take a back seat to that. Kwan had secreted himself in the command bunker, far too well protected for the troubleshooters to reach, and was no doubt content to hole up there until he was safe. Emery and the others would have to leave him there for now, since they had to supervise the evacuation of the delegates. Emery hoped that, just possibly, his culpability in the cargo bay explosion and his wanton sacrifice of the hapless guard who set it off would create enough bad blood that the Neo-Gaians would see fit to extradite him. or exact their own justice. Whatever the case, Quan's ability to do harm had been greatly diminished for now, although he'd done more than enough already. Emery wondered if the guard had left family behind. She wished, for their sake and Psyche's, that she could have stopped him before it was too late. He'd probably been a fanatic, raised to be willing, even eager, to die for his cause, but that still made him a victim. Regardless, she'd asked Zephyr to track down the man's name. She would remember everyone who died on her watch, innocent or not. She would never let herself treat any life as disposable. Now that Psyche's psycho-agents were starting to wear off, the delegates were more amenable to reason, or at least they were no longer trying to attack the troubleshooters. Upon discovering what Psyche had done to them, many were expressing outrage and demanding that Thorne and his accomplices be turned over. Emery knew, however, that Thorne would not allow himself to be taken. The best way to stave off conflict was to see him off quickly. She trusted that he would not attempt to impose his will on Solsus for a while. Indeed, Emery doubted that most Vanguardians had any idea what the Thorns had really been capable of. Once Rachel got the word out, Elliot Thorne and his co-conspirators would probably not stay in office very long. It was a milder fate than he deserved, perhaps. But perhaps there was no fate worse for him than the loss of Psyche. So Emery escorted Thorne and the rest of the Vanguard delegation to their ship to make sure they got away cleanly. But before he left, Thorne paused and floated over to her.
Emerald, I do regret what happened between us in the observation bay. I overstepped myself in a way that I should not have even contemplated. You must understand that...
Elliot! Don't even try to justify it. Just apologize.
I apologize, Emerald. Do you accept it?
I'm thinking about it. I may not tell you. It's not about you.
I understand. Acceptance rather than control.
Something like that.
If nothing else, I need you to know that I truly care for you, Emerald. I simply try too hard to control you.
Just like you did with Psyche. One thing I've learned, Elliot. If you want to love someone, if you want to have a relationship with them, you have to learn to let go of them, of yourself. Love is surrender. It's about not being in control and liking it. It's about being willing to let your guard down and trust in someone else. Sometimes it backfires. Sometimes they betray you, use you, hurt you. But you still have to be willing to take the risk, because that's the only way it can ever work. Tell Grandma Rachel she's welcome to visit me anytime. And I'd love to meet my new baby aunt.
You are a wise young woman, Emerald Blair. It is truly my loss that I no longer have you by my side. However, I fear I may be too old and rigid to change my ways.
Just try to change the way you raise your kids.
We shall see. Goodbye, Emerald Blair, for now.
I'm sorry, Elliot.
Rachel Kincaid-Shannon held Thorne's hand against Psyche's life support pod, unable to look away even though the sight within was unbearable. Through the bio-support gel, Psyche's angelic face was severely burned, her skull half-caved in, her golden hair scorched and matted with blood and flecks of bone. Her beauty was destroyed. The butterfly wings on her left hand were charred black. Her right hand was gone.
It's a miracle she wasn't killed instantly. An ordinary human would have been. The crates shielded her from most of the shrapnel, the whipping cables. It was a low-energy explosion, and the flames were snuffed when the bay decompressed. But she was clinically dead from the concussive shock and her other injuries when we got to her. If one of our teams hadn't tracked you there and been right on hand...
What are her chances?
Her body's on full life support. We can sustain it indefinitely, reattach the severed limbs, repair or regrow the ruptured organs. But the internal hemorrhaging and gross structural damage to her brain are too severe. Even with the most aggressive intervention, at best, she will live out her life in a vegetative state. We should let her go.
No, that is not an option.
We'll take her back to Vanguard. Get her the best care.
You're not hearing me, Elliot. Everything that made her psyche, her personality, her memories, most of those parts of her brain are irreparably damaged. Even if we regenerated the brain tissue, she'd be a blank slate. She wouldn't be Psyche. I'm sorry, Elliot. Her body may be on life support, but your daughter is dead.
Thorne stood in silence as her words sank in. Rachel could see his struggle to control himself.
That magnificent mind, the most beautiful part of her. We spent years designing it, crafting it. It was a work of art. The first of its kind, unequaled in all creation, the pinnacle of Vanguardian science. How can it be the one part of her we can't fix?
Let her go, Elliot.
No! I will not leave my daughter to die within the space of those who killed her. We will take her back to Vanguard. Keep her alive, Rachel.
Elliot!
Whatever it takes!
After another moment, Rachel nodded and bent to her task. She expected that once Elliot felt he had returned his daughter home, he would finally let her body meet its natural death. But she couldn't shake the uneasy feeling that he might have other plans.
This may not be a happy ending.
Zephyr spoke to Emery as he flew her and the other troubleshooters out from Neogaia. Bast was still under sedation in the medbed, on her way back to Demetria for imprisonment and probable extradition to Earth. Emery had just come out of the shower tube, using a special rinse Zephyr had synthesized to kill off her hair mites and chemically fry their nanotech passengers just in case.
A lot of bad blood has been created. There may be more violence now, against the Vanguard and other mods, or perhaps among different habitats as they take out their anger and reassert their independence. Building a coalition to keep the peace may have become much harder.
For now, maybe. But it's still a good idea. I'm hoping enough people still know that. Hell, Thorne and Ty both tried to disguise their schemes as plans for a cooperative alliance because that made it look good to people. So maybe that's still what people want. And I think it's what we need, too.
I agree. However, there is still one more conspiracy to expose. If we bring down Ty so soon after exposing Thorne, it may create even more mistrust toward the idea of an alliance.
But it has to be done, Zeph. We have to get the troubleshooters back. That's even possible with Sensei dead. He was our soul, Zephy. He was our conscience.
Speaking of conscience, Emery, I need to know about those override codes.
I'm sorry, pal. I was ordered not to tell you.
Was it Ty?
No, they've always been there.
Do we all have them?
Only the ships. You know how dangerous your drive is. There have to be safeguards in case someone takes over your mind or...
Or I go rogue.
It's been known to happen.
Far more often with humans. And your body is a deadly weapon, too. Do you have override codes?
Maybe. I kind of hope so, almost.
If so, then why don't I know them?
Zephy, do you really believe that I'd ever use those codes on you if you were still yourself at all?
I can model no credible scenario in which you would.
So?
And neither would I. Though I admit there have been some moments lately where I would have been tempted.
Only lately?
Don't make me recite a list. This isn't funny to me, Emery. I joined because Sensei promised me freedom.
It's not about you, honey. It's just the ship.
Still, how would you feel if something took away all control of your own body and left you helpless to resist?
I understand.
I appreciate it.
Hey, wait a minute. I thought you were the one who didn't care about being installed in a ship. I thought physical reality was too abstract and detached for you.
Yes, but as long as I'm in control of this vessel...
Oh, bullshit! Honey, you called it your own body. Admit it, you think of yourself as a ship now.
I do not. I think of myself as your ship.
Oh, Zephy. Give me a sologram so I can hug you.
The sologram formed.
Not in the possessive sense, you understand. Your as in your partner or your friend.
Oh, shut up and give me some sugar.
Kari and the others proposed finding a safe place for Emery to hole up until they found definitive evidence against Ty. But Emery had other ideas.
I'm going to turn myself in. Let the Syrian courts try me publicly and trust that the whole system isn't corrupt. If Ty wants to make a case against me, we can make one against him and expose him for the fraud he is.
If we're lucky. He's pretty good at falsifying evidence.
That's right. I helped him do some of that myself. In other cases, nothing deadly or anything.
And I wouldn't put it past him to arrange an accident to silence you, Emery.
Okay, so it's a risk. So what? They don't call us safety shooters. In the past 24 hours, I've been tried to be killed by, well, you know what I mean, by two thorns, a small zoo, a mob of diplomats, and a whole vacuuming warehouse. Hell, I'm just getting warmed up. Ty wants to come after me? Just let the punker try it. I'll kick his ass right back to Earth.
Yeah.
We'll take him down together. Whatever it takes, the troubleshooters will bring him down.
Damn straight.
The next morning, Zephyr awoke them with the news that Gregor Ty had been indicted and placed under arrest on multiple charges of conspiracy, information fraud, blackmail, torture, and assassination.
What?
Apparently, the evidence was gathered due to the diligence and attentive eye of a TSC employee who, with assistance from Lodestar, Tor, Peregrine, and a dozen other troubleshooters, has devoted the past month to assembling a data trail conclusively linking Ty to the assassination attempt on Malik Yohannes, the torture of Joseph Mkunu, the viral infection of the Cerulean mainframe, and numerous other instances of crime and fraud. Said employee, one Mrs. Salome Knox, declined to comment on the case.
Whoa, Sally?
Of course. Who else? Nothing gets by our girl Sally.
Don't I know it?
We all take her so much for granted, even though we couldn't get a thing done without her. I suppose Ty did too. It would lend her a certain invisibility.
What she has is an endlessly judgmental nature. She's never approved of anything anyone has done in the history of Solsis. No wonder she brought him down.
Kari just sat there staring.
Salome?
On the trip back, Emery spent her nights with Vijay, welcoming the distraction from her memories of Thorn. But they turned out to be more relaxed encounters than were usual for her, and she was content to spend most of the time just snuggling with him. She cried on his shoulder a few times, and actually acceded when he asked if she wanted to talk about it. It was relaxed, friendly, nothing profound. But that was what she needed. Instead of the arrest she'd expected, Emery returned to a hero's welcome from the TSC. She begged it off, insisting that Sally Knox and the troubleshooters who'd helped her were the real heroes of the hour. But Sally had gone on vacation, finding the press attention and adulation as tiresome a distraction from her work as the troubleshooters' antics. And the TSC staffers, along with the media, had had 4 days to cheer Lodestar and the others. Now they were eager to cheer Emery and Kari's team for their accomplishments at Neo Gaia. Emery did her best to bear it graciously, but still didn't feel she deserved it. But it wasn't all praise and interview requests. The Sheep's government had been quick to denounce Ty and his coalition and was now investigating them aggressively, determined to prove to the rest of the Belt that they had been duped along with everyone else. Their deniability was effectively plausible. None of Sally's evidence implicated any CS official or body in Ty's crimes. Emery wasn't entirely convinced, but at least their embarrassment and fear of retaliation would make them act as though it were true, and that was good enough for now. Emery, Kari, and the others spent long hours in the small, classical Bernal sphere that served as the Sheaf's capital, giving their depositions to the Syrian prosecutors and adding the last few nails in Ty's coffin. The process was difficult for Emery, since most of her evidence had come through Psyche, a source who was no longer available and whose integrity was questionable. Although Emery knew her interviewer was simply playing devil's advocate, she had a few heated exchanges with the Shiva woman. She bore it by reminding herself that it would help convict Ty. But that wasn't enough. She needed to confront him face to face. The prosecutors advised against it, a star witness confronting the defendant before the trial, but she promised to behave herself and do nothing that could be perceived as coercive. Still, when they brought her into the interview room where he waited, it took all her willpower not to break that handsome square jaw of his. Seeing her, he straightened up, sucked in his gut, and preened a bit.
Don't even try it, Ty. There's nothing you can do that would make you attractive to me, not after what you did.
I'm sorry you feel that way.
You don't have a clue how I feel. You took the finest, purest thing in my life, a symbol of hope for millions of people across Solstice, and you stained it. Maybe forever. It'll never feel the same.
So I forced you to admit that you don't live in a comic book, that the world is about shades of gray and tough compromises, that the good of the many often requires sacrifices for the few. Someday, you'll realize I did you a favor.
Like the way the Sheaf has sacrificed you? Suddenly, everyone who was praising you to high heaven a month ago isn't returning your calls anymore.
If I have to be sacrificed for the greater good, I accept the need for that.
Oh, is that why you're talking plea bargain already?
I'm still hoping there's a way I can contribute to Strider civilization, do something more constructive than languishing in a cell.
You mean a way you can still maneuver us into doing what you want? Damn, why is it so hard to keep power out of the hands of control freaks?
Power entails control. People get the jobs they're temperamentally suited for.
But leadership requires trust. Trust in the people you lead. You both came so close, you and Thorn. You knew your talk of partnership and unity would get people working together, and it did. So why couldn't you just trust it to keep working that way? If you'd both really meant it, we'd all be better off right now.
Because the words aren't enough. The simple ideas that win people's allegiance are never enough to get the job done. Especially not out here. You're all so obsessed with your individual wants, you aren't willing to put aside your own needs for the greater good. But that's the only way it can work. Sacrificing the rights, the safety, even the lives of the few is often the only way to protect the many. Especially when the few are so powerful.
Jeanette LaSalle.
Who? Oh, yes. The bystander from the Gagarin-Grad operation.
That's all she was to you, isn't it? A bystander, a statistic. Well, I met her parents yesterday. Miriam LaSalle and Jacob Saperstein. They came all the way from Mars to testify against you. And they talked to me about Jeanette.
And now you're going to tell me about her to try to make me feel guilty.
Feel whatever you want. Just know who it was you had killed. She was born premature, and her bones were weak because of the gravity. Even today, with all our hormone and gene therapies, a few cases like that still crop up. They said Jeanette would never be very strong, but her parents never told her that. Never made her believe there were limits to what she could do, who she could be. They encouraged her to be active, athletic, to run and jump and play, and she did, Ty. She could run like a gazelle. When she was 10, she won a trophy for the 200-meter dash. It was the proudest day of her parents' life. Until the day she was accepted into college.
You think I don't regret the death of an innocent? You have no idea of the things I lived through growing up, the friends I lost. But if bearing the hurt of a few losses can prevent the loss of millions more, then it must be done no matter the pain.
You and Thorn. He thought he'd finally found the way to engineer humanity into something greater. You thought that mods didn't matter and we were still the same as we'd always been. But ultimately, you were both just out for your own power.
I'm nothing like that monster.
No. He's better at it than you could ever be. You think you were so much in control, but you did exactly what he predicted every step of the way, and that's what he was counting on. You played right into his hands, proved him right about the Sheaf being the common enemy we had to unite against, and you couldn't even see you were playing into his hands because you couldn't admit for a second that you might be wrong. At least Thorn was willing to admit that at the end. I wonder if you ever will.
You're so blind. You think this is all about individual people and their egos. If it isn't a comic book game to you, it's a soap opera. Don't you get it yet? We Sheevers had to do what we did because if we hadn't, Earth would have. They would have come out here and forced to protect themselves. And you know what that would have led to? I did it all to protect the Striders, to keep my people free.
What the vac difference does it make if you just do Earth's job for them? That's not called protecting your people, that's called betraying them.
Maybe in your simple world, you're just too self-absorbed to see the big picture. The green blaze. You're a fire, all right. The kind that can too easily burn out of control and devour everything around it. I should have known you'd be a rogue element. I never should have believed I could rely on you. You're a symbol of everything that makes the Strider so volatile, so wild.
Symbol of the Striders, huh? No wonder the troubleshooters fought so hard to defend me.
Back at the TSC,
every trace of Gregor Tai had been expunged from Sensei's old office. Its new occupant, Lydia Muchangi, had returned some of Villarreal's gear and souvenirs to their traditional places, including his Shashu armor. After Emery and Kari's team had been given a chance to recuperate, Muchangi assembled them and the other available troubleshooters for a talk.
The time ahead will be tough. Our credibility, our reputation for impartiality has suffered a hit. The arrests and resignations should help, but the stain is on the whole corps, and it will take time. Yes, Tenchi.
I'd be willing to resign if it would help. I did agree to do certain things for Tai.
Only so that you could investigate him and help the Corps.
But before that, I was so willing to go along with him. If he hadn't accused Emery, I might have...
No one can hold you accountable for hypotheticals, Kari. You deserve commendation, not resignation. In fact, I'll accept no more resignations, even from those of you whom Tai persuaded to participate in various minor illicit activities. If we're to redeem the Corps, we need to give its members the chance to redeem themselves. Besides, let's face it, Tai wasn't wrong about everything. The new methods and resources he has brought to the Corps did improve our effectiveness and allowed us to save many lives that otherwise would have been lost. Some of those resources are no longer available with the loss of his coalition's support, and certainly many of his tactics require too great a compromise of civil rights. But where feasible, and after careful deliberation, we're going to keep what we can of Tai's reforms, with new checks and balances put in place to minimize the chance of corruption. Still, times are likely to be turbulent for a while, so we need as many troubleshooters as we can hold on to if we're to make a difference. Blaze, you seem unsure.
It's just... I have to wonder how much a difference we can really make. I mean, it was Sally who brought down Tai. And if anyone's going to make peace in the Belt, it'll be the diplomats and politicians, the people who make treaties, not a bunch of super-powered crime fighters. Thorne was right about that, at least. All we can do is treat the symptoms.
It seems to me, Emerald, that you made a very big difference. You exposed a massive Vanguardian conspiracy, helped stymie a Neo-Gaian power play, and single-handedly averted a war between those two powers.
Well, I guess you could see it that way, but it wasn't because of being... It was more luck than anything, and knowing the right people. It's not the sort of thing that happens every day.
No, it isn't. But you know what is going on every day? People are getting murdered. They're getting raped. They're getting beaten. Their ships are getting crippled by meats, threatened by flares, attacked by pirates. Gangs are fighting for turf, governments are clashing for power, and innocent people are getting caught in the middle. Now, maybe the troubleshooters can't do anything about the governments, or wipe out the gangs, or solve the underlying social problems that create crime and injustice and abuse. Hopefully someone can, but we can't. But you know something, my friends? We can't stop the sun from flaring or meats from having kinetic energy. But we can go out there and try to help the people who get hurt by those things. Maybe it's not up to us to save the worlds. But those people out there are the ones who live in the worlds. Tackling the big picture problems means nothing if we lose sight of the individual.
The troubleshooters took her words in silence. Emery met her eyes in gratitude, and Lodestar smiled in return. Then she pulled her lanky body to its full height.
So what the hell are you all sitting around here for? You're troubleshooters. So get out there and get yourselves into trouble.
...5,237 kilometers out from Ceres. Emery coasted through space toward the smuggler's ship, her suit in camouflage black once again. Like them, she took advantage of the darkness of Ceres' umbra. To her left, Ceres was a big, dark ellipse blotting out the Sun, Mercury, and Mars, dotted with its own human-made constellations and ringed by a scintillating halo of multicolored lights that seemed to grow bigger and brighter every day. She took a moment to appreciate how beautiful it was.
It would be a few minutes yet before intercept. Luckily, she had Zephyr's voice to keep her company.
I think Lodestar will be a good leader.
Yeah, we're in good hands.
If anything, her codename fits her new role better than her old one. Were I so inclined, I might consider that a good omen.
If you say so. I'm just happy to be back in the fold. I'm a troubleshooter again.
You never stopped, as far as I'm concerned. What I'm curious about is whether you still consider yourself a Vanguardian as well.
Yes. Whatever Thorn and Psyche did, those are still my people. My family. They're a link to my father, and that's something I don't want to deny anymore.
I suppose the news of Thorn's resignation carries some weight for you, then.
It's a good start. We'll have to see what happens next.
Now she was close enough, the smuggler's ship occulting the stars in front of her. Drawing her grappling gun, she made sure of her target lock, corrected for relative motion, and fired. In another moment, she was space skiing behind the smuggler's ship, reeling herself in on the grappler's fullerene cable.
Still, I don't think I want to go back there for a while yet. The memories are too fresh.
I understand. Just as well our work will keep us busy.
Yeah, that's what I need to do.
She came up against the ship, climbing into the exhaust bell of one of its dormant rockets and tearing aside a sealing ring in order to slip into the interior hull space.
Save some lives, make a difference, have wild thank you sex with every cute guy I rescue.
I see. So much for your newfound readiness to love.
Hey, if love happens, I won't push it away anymore.
She reached the rear bulkhead of the habitat section, took out a tube of cutting paste, and squeezed out a circular outline.
But I guess I don't need it right now. It's funny. Before, I was always looking for a surrogate father and trying to push him away at the same time. I guess you were right about that Oedipus complex after all, buddy.
In this case, the proper Freudian term would be Electra complex.
Emery stuck a remote igniter into the paste and spread an airlock gel membrane over it.
Oh, really? I thought those were the guys who picked the presidents in America.
Well, Freud has been largely discredited.
Pulling back, she ignited the paste.
But seriously, I've got you, I've got my job, my friends, hot body. What more does a gal need?
Slowly, Emery squeezed her way through the permeable gel layer into the habitat section of the ship. Once it sealed behind her, she removed her helmet and torso unit and made her way forward to where a band of murderous space pirates lay in wait.
Plus, I get to travel and meet interesting people.
True. But I'm wondering one more thing.
Oh yeah, what's that?
Who do you think they'll get to play you in the movie this time?
If Zephyr wanted to get Emery riled up, it worked. And just in time, too. Three burly pirates carrying even burlier guns barreled through the hatch from the forward compartment looking for the intruder.
Looking for trouble, boys?
As they tried to bring their guns to bear on her, the green blaze gave them a saucy grin.
You just found her.
Only Superhuman is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2012 by Christopher L. Bennett. Recorded by arrangement with Tom Doherty Associates, LLC. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication prohibited. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Alyssa Wilmoth as Emerald Blair. Colleen Delaney as Psyche Thorne. Thomas Keegan as Zephyr, Elliot Dash as Elliot Thorne, and Ken Jackson, Evan Casey, Yasmin Twazon, Tracy Lynn Oliveira, Barbara Pinellini, Richard Rowan, Christopher Sheeran, Michael Glenn, Kimberly Gilbert, David Coyne, Eric Messner, James Konacek, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nora Ashradi, Thomas Penny, Michael John Casey, Joe Brack, Nick DePinto, James Lewis, Joel David Santner, Terrence Aisleford, and Stephen Carpenter. Directed by Nanette Savard. Adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Additional original music by Thomas Hogan and Dan Sondak. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Only Superhuman, be sure to look for Marvel Civil War and other graphic audio comics titles available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for a preview of another graphic audio title.
Rogue Angel 38, The Matador's Crown.
Welcome to the beautiful city of Cadiz.
In the room next to mine, I found a man who had been stabbed to death. Has this guy been transporting stolen artifacts? There was a wooden crate in the room, and whatever had been inside, it was gone.
If illicit trade is going on in the city, it's our responsibility to put a stop to it.
Garin Braden.
What adventures have you been up to?
I have a feeling I don't need to answer that one.
So, you up for a little afternoon entertainment?
What did you have in mind?
Bullfights in a few hours.
You have questions about the art of the bullfight, Anya. Just ask. There is nothing I haven't heard.
Diego's killer will pay.
You say that like you know who the killer is.
I do.
If I work my cape successfully, the bull will not be aware of me until the moment I wish to be revealed.
Watch yourself, Anya. Don't throw stones unless and until you've got facts.
I sweep it this way and that, back and forth. Then I allow the bull to see my feet.
He's dead. Because of that stupid crowd.
Then my knees and up to my hips.
Want to tell me how this went from the dirt where I dug it up 3 days ago to the hotel room of a dead man to a police evidence locker to your desktop?
Then finally, when I wish it, I reveal myself to my opponent.
Rogue Angel 38, The Matador's Crown, in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.